Series, and our new series is called Moving On, of all things, thus the trailer and all the boxes. We've packed up the grads, they're ready to go. Since you've gone away from your school years, we all have hopes, we all have dreams. Think of what your dreams were as a senior, okay, or that stage of life, 17, 18-year-olds. I want to be a farmer, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a lawyer, I want to be not in jail. Okay, whatever your hopes and dreams were, how many of you could honestly say, about 95 to 100%, I'm doing what I wanted to do as a 17 or 18-year-old? Okay, how many of you, now kids, watch this, how many of you have somewhat modified or changed those dreams? Take note. Okay, that's not to say you shouldn't dream, just reality is something that does wake us all up. Moving on, we're doing a four-week series during the month of June on this. Now, here's just a little trivia thing as it goes up on the screen. How many times do you think the average American expects to move in their lifetime? Can you see the numbers? 5.9, 11.7, 8.3. At your table, discuss quickly. All right, you should have a number. 5.9, 11.7, 8.3. 11.7 is the correct answer. Now, for the if you look in statistically, over the last 5 years, over 40 million Americans move, relocate each year. Now, think about that. This has been pretty true the last 5 years. 40 million Americans will move. That's about 13% or so of all Americans. The vast majority of them, the people that move, slide, thank you, move within their home state. Do you realize that? If you're going to move, you stay within your state, wherever you're currently living. They move 13%, move to a different state. 0.3% or 0.4 almost moved to a different country. How many would like to move to a different country? Yeah. Okay. Now, here's the intriguing thing. That seems like a lot of people. But do you realize those statistics are way down from what they had been? Michigan alone, because of the economy, for no other reason really, since the year 2008, one out of eight Michigan people have moved out of the state of Michigan because of the economy. Do you realize in this church, since about 2000, because you got to look at the economic crashes, whatever you want to call it, we've had 100 families go because of the economy. Different part of the state, a number of them have left out of state. That's reality, true? That can be reality. It's a sad reality because many of them were faithful workers, great people. But that is reality. Now, we, as a church, you have to deal with that. But think of your own family. Mom and dad or husband and wife get married. They have children. Eventually, your family grows, but it's also going to shrink somewhat. Your kids are going to go. It's inevitable. You hope they go anyway. Okay? Now, our series that we're in this month doesn't deal with our physical moving from one location to another, but it deals with moving from stages of life to another. And if you live long enough, you will go through multiple stages. Think of where you've been already. Most of us have no recollection of your infancy. You may have one little or two little fuzzy memories, but that's about it. And then your preschool years. Some of us can remember back to preschool. One of my most vivid memories of that period of time was back in the 50s. I'm dating myself here. But I had two cousins who played on the Michigan State Rose Bowl team. One of them was one of the stars of the game. And I remember my mom having an, You remember the old radios of the 50s? You'd have to look, Google that. And I do remember as a small child listening to the Pastula Boys from Marshall, Michigan in the Rose Bowl. You'd have to go back in the mid-50s to see that. Now, grade school years, I remember my kindergarten teacher. I remember my first kiss, my first love in grade school. I remember being on the, what's the word? And aw. Okay? I really remember my junior high years. President John F. Kennedy was killed in what year? 63. I would have been 12 years old. I remember that period of time. How about high school? It's high school for some of you just yesterday. Some of us, like me, it's been 52 years since I graduated. Now, Shaver's older than I am, so I'll just point that out. Then you go to college, maybe you go to the military, maybe you start the workforce, maybe, but then you may have gotten married, and that may or may not have worked out. Unfortunately, for some of us, it doesn't. Then you have children. Aren't those early children, those first kids, so precious? I remember holding my baby. It's my baby boy. He was the first baby in my entire life I ever held. And I'm holding him going, here's my thought, I hope I don't break them. And then you have the second kid. Who cares, right? And you move on in all those stages of life. Well, this month, here's what we're talking about. Today, it's graduating to adulting. Next week, you'll be practice to purpose. The week after, singlehood to parenthood. And then the last week will be empty nest to what's next. Life transitions happen. No matter how much you want them or don't want them, they're going to happen. Whether you welcome them or not, transitions in life happen. And for me, as a high school kid, it's understandable that you could lose a grandparent. I wasn't close to my grandparents, but I understood death. But then when I lost my first best friend in a car accident, and another one in Vietnam. That has a way of changing your outlook. It has a way of making life, as much as we don't care for it, very, very real. Transitions hurl us, think of a ball just chucking it, hurl us into an unknown future. You think you've got it figured out. Students, you don't, because life changes. Life changes. And sometimes you go through life and it's like a stagecoach where the driver has been shot and the stagecoach is just barreling towards a cliff. I think we've all seen movies like that. And you sort of wish you hadn't gotten on the stagecoach, but here you are. And you're on a ride that you probably didn't sign up for. Life transitions can be wildly unpredictable like a storm. Have you ever just had been sitting around, all of a sudden you see the clouds get dark and then a huge wind followed by the rain and lightning, thunder, all of that. And where did that come from? Very good. That happens in life. You can lose your job that quick. Many people here have experienced that. You thought you were going to be working in a certain place all of your life, and one day you're not. You can lose a loved one quickly, suddenly, with no warning. You can get a medical report that, where did that come from? And a number of people here can relate to that. You didn't plan on it. Now, some of those wild transitions can be good ones. I remember my wife telling me, I'm pregnant. What? That wasn't expected, okay? But stuff, what? Happened. Life transitions can arrive not wildly. They can creep up on you, much like the coming of fall. Have you noticed how the leaves are so green right now? They're not always going to be green, folks. They're going to be gone. But before they're gone, they change color. It creeps up on us. What used to fill us doesn't fill us anymore. What used to make us happy no longer does. what used to be easy, like getting out of a chair. The kids are going, what are you talking about? Give yourself 50 years. Remember, you'll be like mom and dad. I'm amazed at how many times I grunt over the simplest things. Basically, it's getting up and sitting down. Okay? Where did that come from? I don't know. Used to be a time, trust me, if I couldn't run a mile under 5 minutes and go out for a 20-mile run, I thought, I'll never see that day. I'm so fit. I used to think when I was lifting weights with the football team, there'll never be a day when I can't bench 225 pounds at least 10 times. I grunt now at the thought of both. Life changes. These transitions can leave you, as they have me, feeling a little uncomfortable in terms of how you're feeling, your thoughts, your physical sensations. They just sort of hit you. And it's like one day you're feeling young, Kyle Boer. Next day, not so much. And even if a change is welcome, getting out of high school, going on with life, you can't tell me that there isn't some anxiety, some self-doubt, and just a twinge of fear. 52 years I've been out of school. I never thought I'd get through school. Many didn't think I would either. My senior year, I've told you this before, I had to go and beg every one of my 6 high school teachers to reinstate me in their class so I could graduate. The teachers had a bad impression of me. That's all I can tell you. As I walked with a partner down that long aisle, did an outdoor cemetery. It's cemetery ceremony. I'm walking with Cynthia Whitmore. She's like number 3 in the class. I was in that class. I'm walking with Cynthia. And the whole way down the football, we had to march the whole 100 yards and then go and sit on the 50-yard line in front of all the who's who. The whole way, she's nudging me. She's reaching out. She's holding my hand. She thought I was adorable. But the whole time, she's saying this, don't do anything bad. I kid you not. I know what you're thinking. Don't do it. She's asked me, did you wear pants under your gown? All of those questions. I cried once I got my diploma. I had all these dreams. I had no idea if any of them would come about. I was scared spitless. If I could go back to my high school years today, are there certain things you might change? Yes. I loved my high school 4 years. I really did. And to leave that traumatized me. I was scared. But when we go through these transitions, we have to learn to lean on other people. And some of those people you haven't even met yet. Isn't that cool? Some of the best friends you'll ever have, some of the most supportive people you have, are people that you have not met yet. You got to learn to grow as a human being. You have to learn to lean on them. You have to learn new lessons. When I first hired into a factory, it was a place that used big presses and it bent metal bars and all of this stuff. I sat down ready to go to work for my first day, and I looked at this old grizzled guy that was on my shift, and I said, you got any words of wisdom? Trying to be a smart butt. He held up his hands like this. Honestly, wait, I think he was like that. He had lost 3. He says, don't keep your hands in the press too long. And I went, ha! And just as I started to laugh, I heard this agonizing scream. The last minute of the last shift, a young guy got his hand in the press. It took him an hour and a half to peel him out of it. I've told you that before. Sometimes it's smart to learn some things from others. We have to develop new skills, and we have to learn as Christians to experience the presence of God. There's some things you're going to go through in life. It is only by having a relationship with the Almighty that you will get through it. It will not be your spouse. It will not be your friend. It will not be your pastor. You will have to depend upon God and only God to get through those situations. You're going to have to learn to trust God's plan for your life. You think you got it all figured out? You got this A to B thing? No, life isn't like that. God has a plan for your life, and he's like the little cat with a mouse. He's going to bat you around like this and keep you going in the straight and narrow to accomplish his will for your life. He has a plan. And when you think you have no plan and there is no hope, that's when you look up, because he's there for you. You have to learn that God's going to provide for you. If you love him and you serve him, he will provide for you. He doesn't give you all of your greeds in life. He gives you your needs in life. And most of all, when I became a believer, here's what I learned. God is going to protect you. The days of your life are numbered. The hairs on your head, he knows the exact number. And the best part is this. You cannot die until he says so. Do you not realize the freedom that gives you to live life? Now, if you want to go out and be an absolute idiot, knock yourself out. But what you can affect is your quality of life, not your quantity of life. The minute you were born, he has a time span for you. I am always utterly amazed when I read the obituaries or see it on the news, and somebody very famous, athlete, businessman, pastor, younger than me, has passed away. And I keep asking myself and the Lord, why? Because he's not done with me yet. Maybe I'm going to live to be 195 because he's got a lot to teach me. I don't know. But you absolutely are protected by the Spirit of God and his ministering spirits called guardian angels, because he has something for you to do. And you're either going to go through life, let's say your lifespan is 70 years, you're either going to go through the 70-year period and then die, because that's your end date, and you'll have not done a thing for him, or you will have done something for him. The choice is whose? It's yours. So we should view all these transitions and these phases in life not as obstacles, but as pathways. Think of a pathway. It leads to an open door, open gate for the next step of your journey. If we look back at the transitions we've already gone through, and many of us have gone through quite a few of them, we can draw strength and we can draw confidence. Hey, he's got me this far. If he wants me to go one more day or another year or 10 more years, that's his will. I will move forward. I will not camp here. It's a bad thing when you become apathetic and you settle for mediocrity and you settle to be less than what God created you to be. He has a plan. You don't always know what the plan is. I can't see what's beyond that gate, but I can see where my next step is. Does that make sense? And if you love him and you serve him and you're obedient to him and you take a step, he's going to be with you. The success of the step is immaterial. Do you understand? Being in the will of God is the important thing. So our theme today is graduating to adulting. The transition is a huge step. You think of life. You move from an infant, where you have no abilities, no skills, to becoming an adult, seemingly overnight. Now, if you're a teenager, for me to get to 18 seemed like a lifetime. In fact, it was. But didn't that seem longer than going from 18 to 50? It becomes a blur. So that is a step. It involves our moving from childhood or teenage years to being in the age range of what we might call an adult. Whatever that is. Now, being an adult varies from culture to culture. nation to nation. Even within America, the size of our country, the amount of people we've got, different sections of the country say an adult is this or this or this. Generally in America, we would say two things bring you to adulthood. The age of adulthood doesn't mean you act like an adult. We'll talk about what that looks like. But to what, where you're recognized. The first is graduating from high school. Well, I didn't graduate. Okay. Then it's 18 or 21. There's two standards. Graduating from high school, getting your GED, but generally it's high school because many people don't finish. For some reason, they go on, they're 30, 35. So it's generally out of high school or the age 18 or 21 in America. Would you agree? Doesn't mean you act mature, but that's when, hey, you're supposed to grow up sometime here. That's what it means to be an adult, and that's what we're talking about. This transition from who you were to what God wants you to be. So this morning, I thought it might be fun to have introduce a bit of a family to you. It's not the whole family, it's part of the family. One of our graduates, Corbin Hasselback, is going to come up here. His parents, Bryce and Mindy, are coming with him. And Grandpa and Grandma, Artie and Sue Reed, are going to come. Corbin, you get one of the two middle seats. Okay? Now, before you sit, your parents are going to sit on one side of you, whichever side they choose. Grandpa and Grandma on the other side. You have to figure out who's the biggest tipper. Parents or Grandpa and Grandma? Can't sit in that one. If he's going to sit there, that one's mine. Now, if he's going to sit there, this one's mine. Grab a stool, guys. Oh, the decisions. That's mine. Thank you.
I can't walk and think.
I know, but that's why you have a husband. Scary thought, isn't it, Mindy? Corbin graduated from high school already, correct?
Yep.
Corbin, I wrote down some questions, sent them to the family, and just to make you think a little bit, and Corbin, this is my first question to you. What are your plans now that you've graduated from high school? And what really, why did you choose whatever you're going to do? Go for it.
Well, I'm going to go to Grand Valley, and I'm going to major in biomedical engineering, biomedical something.
Something.
Yeah, sorry.
Very good. And why?
Well, that's like the precursor to med school, and I want to be a doctor because I can help people and I can make a pretty penny too, so that's cool.
Spoken like a Krauss. Very good. Now, think about that. Dr. Hasselback. It's got a ring to it, doesn't it? We're planning. Very good. Give that back over there to Artie. All right. Bryce and Mindy, question for you. When did the two of you meet, and how did you come to realize that you wanted to be with each other? Because this is the byproduct. How did you meet, Bryce?
Well, we were band geeks. Dating in an odd way.
Very good. There's a lot of people here who could tell a similar story. Mindy, Mike, yeah. How did you know he was the one?
Because he talked to me after I pushed him down the muddy hill.
That is excellent. All right, Artie and Sue, for you guys. All right. Somewhere I've got my questions. Not on this one, I don't. All right, Artie and Sue, for you guys, you've been married how many years, Artie?
47.
47 years. You guys met in school?
Yep.
All right. And you got married, how old were you and how old was Sue?
Sue was 16, I was 17.
16 and 17. And I knew they were young. Since then till now, as a couple, as grandpa and grandma, what attitudes did you have then that you had to say, this isn't going to work as we move into adulthood? What did you have to change in your life? Hold that mic up there, hon.
Well, I'm still learning a lot of things, even after 47 years, but some things were like, you know, I couldn't think of just myself anymore. I have to think of other people. And that was kind of a big thing because, you know, we were married and then a few months later we were a family and had a child. So it was like, had to get a job, had to think of family. A lot of things had to come about. And so I couldn't just think about myself anymore.
Very good. Sue?
Okay. So first of all, I never planned on ever getting married as a child. I was just going to be a home with a million cats. Now I'm home with a million dogs. But, I basically, when I had Mindy, didn't even know how to change a diaper. I didn't know what to do. God's hand has been through our marriage the whole time.
Very good. How many of you could, I know I can relate with that. Because the first child I ever held was my son at birth. It's like, okay, you got to learn on the fly. Who else is in our camp where you felt you were, may not have been super well prepared? All right, very good. All right, Corbin. Moving from childhood, teen years, and we see some pictures up there of that.
No.
At graduation and now towards adulthood, how have you had to change your life as you went through different phases?
Well, I had to pick up new skills. Like from childhood to teen years, I learned how to cook frozen foods.
And,
yeah. I also learned how to do laundry, so I guess I've just become a little more independent over the years.
Very good. Very good. Mindy, for you and Bryce over there, what are a few changes you've had to make in your attitude and actions as not just as parents, but into the working force from being a kid?
Sure. So I think as a parent, especially with Corbin and Carson both had like different medical issues, and I spent a lot of time in their early years being angry. And one thing that I had to do is I had to keep people around me who would tell me things that I knew I needed to hear, but I didn't want to hear. So Leslie Boer, Kelly Adrianson, Emily Mater, and Sarah Carpenter spent a lot of time with me telling me things that I didn't want to hear. And I would come to church very upset a lot of times and want them to tell me what I wanted to hear. But I knew that they were the ladies that would tell me and remind me what I knew and what I needed to hear.
Very good. Very good. Bryce, take that. And your dad had a business. You've moved into taking the business over. What were some, as a kid, you probably helped your dad in the business?
Yes.
What were some, you're no longer a kid now. You're a business owner. What's had to change in your life?
Just probably learning how to prioritize what's most important, because you have to transition from taking care of yourself and maybe your family to trying to grow and get a business to survive, and then trying to prioritize your family and your faith and all of that becomes important.
Is it hard to balance all that?
Yes. We often refer to it as our third evil child. So.
Very good. All right. Artie and Sue, question for you down there. You've got people here that are going to be grandparents soon. Okay. How many grandkids do you have?
Seven.
How many great-grandkids?
None yet.
None yet. And I remember when my son was the same age as Corbin, and I told this story before in church, so for the visitors, he's looking, just do this to your dad. Okay, and he's doing that to me, my son is. And finally I said, what are you doing? He said, anytime I want, go ahead, do it. I can make you a grandpa. So what words of wisdom do you have to the grandpa and grandmas to be?
Well, for me, it's like always have fun. with your grandkids. They can't do the same thing that I did with my kids, so because they're going to go back home and their parents have to deal with it. But all my grandkids can say that they had a fun grandpa.
So, or Mindy?
Dad was very intentional of taking the grandkids out, and he raised three girls, so he has six grandsons and only one granddaughter, and he would take the fellas out, not that he didn't have time with Lauren, but he would take the fellas out, and they would come home, and I would hear these horrible stories about the things they've done, like they would just go out driving in the back roads, and whoever wanted to drive could drive, and at one point in time, the story is they got to a stop sign, and Dad's like, okay, which way should we go, fellas? And so now it's kind of the family joke is let the donut decide.
He spun the car. Very good. Sue? As a mom, watching your kids get into high school and go through high school, dating, breaking up, dreams formed, dreams dashed with all of your kids, what words of wisdom to parents here that are going to deal with that kind of emotional stuff? Anything?
Oh, boy.
That's off the script, by the way.
Yeah, that is. He's catching me off guard here. I guess when the girls would have issues or heartbreaks, I would just let them know, hey, this is not the last day. It's going to be okay. You're going to get through it. Sometimes, you know, I would struggle right along with them because I knew how hard it is. But I'll tell you, I really lucked out because God gave me some really good girls. So just,
very good.
He made it easy on me.
All right, Corbin, last question for you. You're looking at multiple years of schooling if you move on towards being a doctor. What are the skills and attitudes you feel you need to develop further or gain in order to be successful and reach your goal?
Well, I need to learn how to use alarm clocks. That's going to be pretty important. I also need to develop more patience. And yeah, I think that's about it.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, do you have good study habits, you feel?
No.
No. No. That might help.
Yeah, that'll probably help.
All right, Bryce and Mindy, one more for you guys here. I knew her grandparents really well. I know Bryce's mom and dad did not know grandparents at all. So as you think of your grandparents, are you still alive?
No.
No. Okay. What did they do for you that helped build your life?
Well, my grandparents, they were very family oriented. I remember spending a lot of time at their house doing different things, working on cars and going to old car shows. So I remember them being very intentional about investing in me.
Very good. Mindy?
So I didn't know my grandma and grandpa Carnes very well. My grandma and grandpa Reed were amazing. If you had the privilege of knowing them, it's a good thing. And just, they always spent time. Like, we could come over and spend the night, and Grandma would make cookies if she didn't have them. I could ruin Grandpa's puzzles, and he was fine with me the next day. And one thing that I learned from them is just to love people unintentionally. There are a couple different stories. If you knew my dad and his brothers in their younger years, it's amazing that all six of them love the Lord and follow the Lord. But Grandma and Grandpa were just very patient with that and very loving with them. And there are stories, I think twice at least, where they woke up in the morning and there was a hungover young man and no one really knew who he was or where he came from. And before they called the police, Grandma would make them breakfast just because, you know, you did the right thing, but you loved and you showed love.
Yep. Her grandparents really invested well in all of the family. They pointed them towards God. They could be tough, but they showed Christian love. And that has trickled down to from grandpa and grandma to their kids and now grandkids and more than that. So this is the Reeds and the Hasselback. We got one doctor to be. We hope he moves forward in that. Lord knows we need good doctors. But more importantly for all of our grads, and Corbin especially, keep Jesus first in your life. That will be tough because everything out there is attempting to pull you away. Graduating, we're looking at not just from school, but in a broader sense, the movement of a person from their adolescence to being an adult. That's what we're talking about today. What is the process? We either have all done that or we're all in process of accomplishing that. So in the Bible, as I thought about this, who are some of the people in the Bible who did this, who graduated from their youth or what we might call adolescence onto adulthood? I think of King Josiah, somebody we've talked about in the past here. I think of Samuel the prophet. You may remember him. And those guys in the Old Testament. In the New Testament, there's somebody called Mary, mother of Jesus. When she became pregnant, she was in her early teens. Timothy, young preacher. Jesus, of course. But the guy I want to talk about today, if you turn with me to 1 Samuel, and we'll be in verse 16, we'll kind of bounce around a little bit. 1 Samuel 16 is a guy named David. He's a good example of somebody who went through this period of time, through a transition. He was going to become an adult one way or the other, but my goodness, the transition he went through, it's like night and day, we might say. David, we know, is the son and the youngest son of a dude named Jesse. He had seven brothers and at least two sisters that we know of. Now, that's a big family. People just don't have families very often like that anymore. And he was the youngest son. So it's not a matter of hand-me-downs. How many punches do you think he took? That happens in life. He was a shepherd boy. A shepherd is not a glorious occupation. And Jesse apparently owned large herds or was manager of large herds, and all the boys would take their turn at being the shepherd, which means you're away from home, you're out in the woods, you're wandering, or out in the fields, you're wandering from area to area, you're out of sight of the home for quite a while, and it's all up to you. He's the slayer of Goliath. You remember that guy? Played middle linebacker on a team called the Philistines. Nobody else would stand up to Goliath, but David did. He's called the slayer of Goliath. He's a servant of Saul. Saul was a schizophrenic, bipolar, whatever term you want to attach to him, person who happened to be the king of Israel. And the thing is about David, he was a loyal servant to a mean boss. Can any of you relate to that? To a person who probably shouldn't have the job, but yet he does. He was a student of Samuel. Samuel was the prophet. He learned from Samuel. He depended upon Samuel. And sometimes when you go through life, it's good to have a positive, godly influence, somebody that you can talk things over with. He was the sovereign choice to be the next king. Now, God anointed him to be king, chose him to be king. Saul was still the king. He didn't try to push him out of the way. He waited his turn till God placed him where he wanted to be. David was a seeker of God. He's somebody that loved the Lord with all of his heart. Was he a perfect human being? No, but he loved God. It's possible to be an imperfect person and still want to love God with all of your heart. Keep that thought in mind. All of us make bad choices. All of us make mistakes. When God looks at you, he doesn't look at your mistake or your bad choice. He looks at the entirety of your life. Keep that thought in mind. So we're going to look at some life lessons from this guy named David. Every graduate here can learn something. And if you're an adult, you are going to go through yet more transitions in life. So let's learn something from a guy who is one of the most talked about people in the Bible. We've remembered him and have thought about this guy for 3,000 years. So you got to say he had something going for him if God chose to refer him to us. So here's some life lessons that could help you. Most of us are in process in these lessons, but we've got to work hard, not just to know the lesson, to live the lesson. So here's the first lesson. Are you ready? If you've got your notes, you can fill in some blanks there. First lesson is to serve, obey, and embrace responsibility. To serve, obey, and embrace responsibility. I told you about holding my son for the first time. First thought was, am I going to break him? Second thought I had is this. This is honest to goodness what went through my mind, and I said it out loud as the stern nurse is looking at me. She had just handed me my child, and she's looking at me. She's scowling. Because back then, husbands couldn't be in with moms. She's looking at me as though, if you do anything wrong, I will throat punch you. And I said out loud, I have to grow up. She replied to that. It wasn't needed, but she chose to reply to that. In 1 Samuel 16 and verse 11, as we look at that passage, we see that David was somebody who was entrusted with the family's sheep and care for them. That is not a 9-to-5 job. It's a 24/7 job whereby you have to be available all of the time to the sheep. As you read through 1 Samuel 16 and verse 17, you begin to see this trait in David's life. He followed his father's instructions. Kids, he obeyed. He planned ahead. He arranged to have the herd taken care of when he couldn't be there. That's called being somewhat responsible. Okay, at this point, he's probably a 14-year-old kid. He carried food to his brothers who were engaged in warfare, which that's a dangerous situation. He not only served, he obeyed his father and was responsible to get the goodies, if you will, to his brothers on the front line. He directed the nation later as he became king through tough times. Tough times. As a young man, he had common sense. He understood that the buck stops where? Here. Now, this is a trait of adulthood. This is a trait of maturity. When you look in the mirror and you say, the buck stops here, I am responsible for my character, I am responsible for my decisions, I'm responsible for my feelings, and I'm responsible for my thoughts, and I'm responsible for how I treat others. I cannot blame anyone else but who? But me. It does not matter what someone else does to you, you're responsible for how you respond. Do you get that? That's something David learned. This helped him to develop an attitude. These are marks of adulthood. An attitude of gratitude and an attitude of fortitude. You take a cement pill and you toughen up in life. Well, everybody's not fair to me. Grow up. Life is never fair to you. Do you realize you don't deserve anything? You have to work for it. You have to prove that you're worthy of a promotion. You have to prove that you're worthy of a grade. Well, they gave me a grade I didn't like. Then get better. Life is going to be that way for you. He was somebody who, as a child, as a teenager, learned to serve, obey, and embrace responsibility. And because of that, God was able to elevate him. The scripture says over and over and over that God is the one who elevates you and is the one who knocks you down a notch. And if you want God's best for your life, serve. Don't wait till you are told or asked. Serve. Any child that turns 13 in our culture should be going to their mom and dad on a regular basis and saying, how can I help you today? Not wait till they tell you. Because if you wait till they tell you, there's going to be warfare in the house. And you are developing a poor work ethic. Try doing that in a job where you sit on your butt and the boss has to come and practically beg you to do something. Can I get an amen, adults? Every kid needs to grow up and become responsible. Mom and dad don't owe you anything except to try to keep you alive. They don't owe you a car. They don't owe you a phone. They don't owe you a college education. And if you're lucky enough to have parents that can help you in those areas, I hope they're not just doing a welfare job for you, but they're rewarding you for your character. That's what it means to grow up in this world. A second area, a second lesson, is to respect and also use authority. If you were to look in 1 Samuel 24:6 and verse 10, and especially one of my favorite passages in the Old Testament, Psalm 78, verse 70 through 72, David resisted the urge to promote himself. He respected the authority that was there. It may not have been the best authority, but he respected the authority. He didn't try to knock Saul off, if you will. He didn't promote himself. He figured, if I'm going to be king, and God had told him he would be, then it's on God to make me king, not me to become king. Do you see the difference? There's a huge difference. He recognized God's authority as well as Saul's authority, and he learned to share his vision and rally others to it. He was not somebody who was a cruel taskmaster when he became the king. He was somebody that showed compassion. He was somebody who listened. And this is one of the traits of David I liked. I've tried to model this to some degree in my life. He always believed the best in people. Even though he knows some people will use that against you. He chose to be a believer in the good in people. He chose to believe that God can change somebody's life. Third, boy, this is a lesson we need to learn. He learned to deal with rejection, betrayal, and loss. Those are going to hit you in the face sometime in this life. You're going to have, in high school, you're in a closed environment. Pretty much everybody's friends, or at least socially. You don't have anybody necessarily trying to stab you in the back. Vast majority of teachers believe in you and are encouraging, as are coaches and even your employers when you're high school kid. Wait till you get out. You're going to learn there's another side. There's another race of people that are called meanies. Okay? They have a little bit of power and they're going to let you know it. You are going to face rejection. You're going to face people turning on you, and that would imply or include some people who are the closest to you now. They're going to betray you. And you're going to lose. You're going to lose in life. If you just lay there and whine, people will walk over you. It's not how many times you get knocked down, it's how many times you what? Get back up. You're going to get knocked down. And you're going to lose people that are the closest to you when you don't want to lose them. If you don't believe that, Holly Carpenter, are you here? Where are you at, sweetheart? Or is she with our children today? She's over there. I absolutely adore Holly Carpenter. She handled the best she could the fact that she lost her mom. What grade were you in, Holly? Senior in high school. Folks, that was tough for her. The whole town trembled for her. They loved her parents. They loved her, the family. And to watch her go through that and watch who she has become now, I say, go God. But you're going to lose the dearest people to you. You cannot let it traumatize you. God has a plan for your life. Holly would not be the woman and the mother and the teacher she is today if she had just laid there and said, poor me. She said, poor me, but she got up. She kept moving. She chose to honor God. Does that make sense? Another lesson, to be courageous and stand up to danger and evil. Folks, we live in a horrible world. It's a sinful world. Now, does not mean there isn't some good. True? But there are forces at work in this world that want to destroy you as a Christian and your freedom in this country. Have you figured that out? Or is that a newsflash? We have to stand up. We cannot lay down. When, if you read the passage there, 1 Samuel 17, 34 through 37, you will see that David fought a lion, a bear, and Goliath, all in his youth. So when he became king, and other nations attempted to conquer his nation that he was responsible for, when he had traitors who turned their back on him and on his people, when he had to deal with self-absorbed, whiny people in his kingdom, he had to stand up to them. You give an inch to evil, it will take you a mile. Have you figured that out? Folks, we have to stand up. We have to stand up as Americans. We have to stand up as Christians and say to this world that would attempt to put you under their thumb, and after you're under their thumb, a camp somewhere is the next step. We have to say it's enough. No more. We have to raise our voices, and that means we have to stand up to do so. Then we better do it, or we'll lose what God has entrusted to us. We will lose it. David had to stand up. He learned to do so as a kid. Moms and dads, the best thing you can teach your kids is to stand up when they're younger. Stand up against injustice. Stand against evil. How many times have we watched our kids come home having been picked on by some bully? Well, you're a Christian. You just got to pray for them and you got to love them. That's why God gave you two fists. Do you not understand that? I didn't say go beat people up. I said learn to defend yourself. And when you see some bully bad-mouthing, physically abusing some helpless person, God gave you two fists. Stand up against it. Because if we don't stand up, the bullies win. Every time. Next principle from David's life. David learned to fail. David learned to fail. He learned to forsake his sins. He didn't keep living in his sin. And he learned to focus on the future. We all know David's sin, right? At least the most famous one. How about you? Does everybody know your most famous sin? Probably not. There's lessons to be learned in failure. Would you agree? Probably more lessons than winning. We've always heard that in the world of athletics. It's true in your life also. We have to learn to fail and fail well. You have to learn that if you fail, you look at the fact that you lost, that you didn't do your best job. I coached for 40 years in various sports. There are times there were decisions made that cost us the game. You don't believe it? Go back to the state championship game, 1997, Ford Field. Do I need to go on? An official's call can sway the game, can take away a touchdown. You can fail because you made a bad choice. You can fail because the other guy's better in some aspect. True? Yes? Such is life. Don't beat a dead horse. Move on. You have to learn to fail well. Look at it. Say, okay, the decision went against me. I didn't do my best job. The other guy was better. I'll learn a lesson and I'll move on. To fail does not make you a failure. You're only a failure if you accept that you are. He learned to forsake his sins. He screwed up big time. He learned to go to the Lord. In Psalm 32, Psalm 51, he pours his guts out, telling God what a dork he was, and he's asking for God's mercy. And he kept his vision forward. I'm going to do better next time. I will be better next time. Think about this. This is how my mind thinks. You run because you learn to walk. Isn't that deep? Profound, Dakota, isn't it? Dakota's on the cross-country team at Harper Creek High School. You run because you managed to learn to walk. You walk because you learn to stand up. You stand up because you learn to pull yourself up on something. Hopefully it wasn't a little brother or sister, but you're standing up. You learn to pull yourself up because you learn to crawl. And you learn to crawl because it beats staying where you were. That's life. Keep moving where? Forward. David learned to fail by making dumb decisions. I'll throw myself in his camp with him. When he made those decisions, he didn't often repeat them. Instead, he looked around. He got some input. He talked with God. He dusted himself off and said, okay, God, what's the next step? That's how you handle life. That's a sign of maturity. It's not anybody else's fault. It's your fault if you don't keep moving forward. Next lesson. He learned to respond properly when things didn't go his way. 1 Chronicles 17 and 22, great chapters. Now, this is pretty profound. David's the king, okay? He conquers all of his enemies. It's a time of peace now, and he says, you know what? I'm going to build God a big house, a big, big house. Sound like a song, doesn't it? I'm going to build God a big, big house. Yeah, that's what I'll do. He's king. He can make all the decisions he wants. I'm going to be known as the person who built the big, big house for God. He wants to build him a temple. God comes to him and says, I really appreciate your passion. I appreciate your thoughtfulness about me. That's really nice, David. And I know you've got all the money. I've blessed you. You got a lot of money. And look at all the people who look up to you, David. You'd be the perfect person to build a house for me. But don't you hate it when there's a but? As much as you want to do this, as much as I would desire that, as much as I would be blessed by this, you're not the right guy. Your son's going to do it. Now, time out here. In the Middle Eastern culture, if a son ever gave any indication that he wanted to usurp dad, he was killed. Read the life of Herod the Great, the butcher. Anybody in his family even looked cross-eyed at him, they were gone. David looked over at his son Solomon. He says, hey boy, it's going to be up to you. How do you think that affected David? Oh, okay, son, you do it. I'll stand there. Don't you think there was some hurt? Don't you think there was a bit of longing in his life to see that temple done underneath his leadership? It wasn't him. There's going to be times you want to do something really bad, and it's going to go to the next guy. Or what if God says, nice idea, no. That happens in life. Moses comes to mind. Remember, he led the people for 40 years, got up on a hillside. Okay, God, let's go get him. He says, no. Going to be a guy called Joshua. You know, here's the interesting thing. Moses didn't kill Joshua. David didn't kill Solomon. They looked at God in their pain and said, as you say. You see, being an adult means you respond properly, biblically, spiritually, when things don't go your way. I can't think of a bigger disappointment in the Bible than that. Here's your last lesson. This is a great one. 1 Samuel 16:17 tells you all of these lessons. They indicate the type of person David was. He wasn't perfect, but he was somebody who made God his number one. You got a number one in your life? Who or what is it? What's number one in your life? Maybe your own image in the mirror. What's your number one? You see, the number one thing in your life, the thing that you think about, the thing that you put your energy into, the thing that you talk about all of the time, it's number one for a reason. Because you've made it number one. Do you understand that? It wasn't assigned to you. By how you use your time, your talent, your treasures, your thoughts, you've made it number one. And unfortunately, that's for a lot of people, that's called idol worship, because it's not God. It's your health, children, grandkids, spouse, 401k, bass boat, piece of land. You've made it number one, because that consumes your energy. Psalm 42:1, I love this. Here's David. As the deer pants for streams of water, so my soul pants for you. Are you that crazy about God where you pant for him? That in the midst of your disappointments and hurts and dreams and needs, that you turn always to God? We go like this, folks. Watch. This is my attempt at being creative. If you're like me, I really love God. I really love me and all the stuff of this earth. That's why it's so low. Oh, I'm finding God again. Oh, here I am. Oh, yeah. Now I'll wallow here for about 5 years. Oh, back with God. That's most people. Wouldn't it be better to just go a slight raise? Because if you're like this, you're medically dead. Okay. So let's have just a slight increase with little dips. What do you think? Be a panter. I'd have you do that at your table, but I know half of you wouldn't. I know Eric would do it. Eric and Jared will do this. Yeah, go ahead. Be a panter for God. He wanted to know God, and not just intellectually. He wanted God in charge of his heart. Do you realize David wrote over half of the 150 Psalms that are in the book of Psalms? He displayed great passion in his worship. If David were here during the singing time, David would be doing a little boogie and have his hands up, praising God, lifting God up. Here's the average person. That's passionate. That's a panter. I'd believe there was some passion if you were going. Most of you look like you're dead. What kind of passion is that? Baby, do you love me? Try doing this to your spouse. Where the heck is our passion for God? David would be boogieing. David would be raising his hand. David would be singing with his voice. We can learn a lot from this kid that became a man. This shepherd that became the sovereign of Israel. You think? One of those lessons should speak to your heart. After all, the number 7 is the number of completion and perfection. I gave you 7 principles from his life. All right? Put your hands out or on your lap, but somewhere besides where they're normally at. We're going to pray. Father, even as we hear the little baby, that little baby's going to go through transitions in life. All of us have been there. That's normal to be a baby during the time you're supposed to be a baby and not be a baby for 40 years. So, Father, let us appreciate the transitions that you have brought into our life. You've been with us and guided us and protected us and provided for us. Some of us, it's like we've bounced along the road, but we're here. It shows that you love us, you care for us. And Father, we're asking today that you give us some insights into who we are and where we are and show us what our next step would be. We want to be people like David, people who actually grew, people who matured. We're going to make our mistakes, but don't let us wallow in them. Let us lift our voices and lift our hands to you. May we seek you. May we pant for you and want you, even like David did. Don't let us be mediocre. Don't let us be average. Let us transition well through life. And in doing so, we bring honor to you. In doing so, we become who you created us to be. We ask this in Christ's name. Amen. Would you stand with us?